Now, I just want to take a moment and recognize that a lot has happened in the past 2.5 months. See, when COVID-19 came to the U.S., sweeping changes hit us all, from social distancing to shelter in place and more. And while everyone's been hit by this, I want to acknowledge that there's been some major shifts this crisis has put into families, especially families with kids. And as we as church leaders have been checking in on you all, one of the biggest things we've heard back from parents with kids was about the stress that you've been feeling as you've been helping your kids navigate things like distance learning, especially when you have multiple kids. Now, understand, this situation has not only affected the physical aspect of kids' lives, but it's affected the emotional aspects and the social aspects due to the reality of people being disconnected and students being disconnected from school, friends, and more. And for students and for kids, at times it's probably felt like, for them, like their lives have been falling apart. As parents, we feel the weight of helping our kids navigate it all. Yet, as we're doing this, it also leads to some questions for us. See, we have to acknowledge, how does a relationship with Jesus affect how we as parents navigate what's happening around us? And how does that affect how we help our kids navigate what's happening in their lives too? Now, these are big questions. But we also need to recognize that moments like we're living in right now, with these big life changes happening due to things like COVID-19, they also give us huge opportunities to speak into the lives of kids and teens and impact them with the good news of Jesus. Now, this isn't just true for parents with kids, but for students, for you with other students, for adults with other adults. It affects us all. Now, we just finished up a series called 13 Questions, which focused on questions that each one of us, adults, teens, yeah, and even kids, we need to know how to answer for ourselves when it comes to our own relationship with Jesus. But we also need to help others know how to navigate these questions as well. But when it comes to having these kinds of conversations with others, we have to have both the ability to and the right given to us to enter into somebody else's life in this way. Here's where we're going today. We're going to look at a posture and an approach that Paul and Jesus had that allowed them to enter into the lives of others to move them along spiritually. Now, much of what we're going to be talking about will directly apply to parenting. And here's why. Now, I've learned, and I continue to learn, just how critically important this stance and approach is as I work with teens. And what's more, as a newer parent with kids myself, I know that kids don't just magically figure things out on their own. I wish they did, but they don't. And as a parent, I don't always either. See, I need others, I need books, I need mentors, I need resources, and most especially Jesus, to help guide me on what does it look like to parent in a way that moves others towards Jesus, both as a parent with kids and spiritually. And see, it's important to keep learning, to growing, sharing, and remembering as I strive to disciple my kids and those outside the family, to develop in these skills. Which means, while we'll be focusing in the parenting world, what we are going to look at applies equally to all of us as we enter into disciple-making relationships with others. See, this is about both about parenting as well as becoming a spiritual parent through the disciple-making process. So regardless of if you're an adult with kids, whether you're grandparents, maybe you're single, you're part of a young married couple, or you're a teen, this same stance and approach is for all of us. So let's jump in this morning, and we're going to look at Paul as he models his posture and his approach to relationships with the Thessalonians. And we're going to start with our main text this morning, and this is going to be in 1 Thessalonians 1, 5 through 7. Here's what it says. This is Paul speaking. "And you know our concern for you from the way we lived when we were with you. So you received the message," this is the good news of Jesus, "the message with joy from the Holy Spirit in spite of the severe suffering it brought you. In this way, you imitated both us and the Lord." And as a result, you have become an example to all the believers in Greece, throughout both Macedonia and Achaia. Now, in a moment, we're going to be zooming in on Paul's stance and approach, but there is something we need to see first. See, as Paul begins his letter to the Thessalonians, he begins with celebrating. See, spiritual growth and change is happening in and through the lives of the Thessalonians. And following Paul's example, they were beginning to live a lifestyle of disciple-making. They were beginning to impact others around them, making disciples of Jesus who were making disciples of Jesus, who eventually would be making disciples of Jesus. And this was Paul's aim for them as a spiritual parent. And as followers of Jesus, it is the aim that we are also called to have with our kids, with our coworkers, our friends, our family, and beyond. And it was also why Paul's posture and approach is so important for both us to see and to live into, because these things are necessary components that help move others towards Jesus and a life of disciple-making. Now, as we look at what Paul writes here, there's an important word that is at the very beginning of verse 6. Did you catch it? See, let's look at it again. Here's what it says. It says this, "So you receive the message with joy." See, verses 6 and 7 give us a glimpse into Paul's goal for the Thessalonians, and it only began with them receiving the good news of Jesus. Now, however, before the Thessalonians were able to receive this good news, the gospel, and live into the disciple-making process that we see them moving into, there had to be a connection built so that they could receive the good news of Jesus with joy. Paul had to earn the right to speak. Now, think about this for a second. Why would Paul have to earn the right to speak into the lives of the Thessalonians? See, wasn't the good news of Jesus enough on its own? Or what about Paul's authority? Didn't he already have the right based on his authority and his position as an apostle? So why would Paul start discipling by earning the right to speak when by all accounts he should already have it? Here's why. Paul's belief about a disciple-making relationship was this. Our posture in how we approach another person either adds to or subtracts from their ability to hear God's message through us. See, Paul could have shared the gospel, good news of Jesus, and moved on. However, movement towards Jesus isn't based on the authority we have in a relationship with somebody else. It's centered in the relationship, in the bond we have with the other person. It's the quality of our connection with that other person. How they view our relationship with them shapes their willingness to consider God's message through us. And here's the reality, right? Developing this connection with another person, with kids, with friends, with other adults, it takes time, intentionality, and it takes work. And what's more, because it's a relationship, this process doesn't end. It's ongoing. Yet it's through this connection that others give us the right to speak into their lives. They allow us in. So Paul, as a spiritual parent to the Thessalonians, instead of claiming the right based on authority or position, he earned it by the posture he took as he built into his relationship with the Thessalonians. So let's look at this posture that we see in verse 5 more closely, and then start applying it to both parenting as well as disciple-making relationships. So Paul says in verse 5, "You know our concern for you from the way we lived when we were with you." See, Paul's posture towards the Thessalonians, he wanted the Thessalonians to believe that two things were true. First, that Paul's own life and his relationship with Jesus was a model worth following. And second, that the Thessalonians knew that Paul's love for them was genuine and unconditional. So let's unpack the two pieces of this posture, starting with becoming a model worth following. The relationship between the Thessalonians and Paul was one of deepening and close relationships. And understand, Paul willingly and intentionally made it that way. Listen to what he says here in Thessalonians, or 1 Thessalonians 2, 8. So being affectionately desirous of you, like, I really, really love you guys. Because you have become, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our very selves, because you have become very dear to us. So when Paul says, you know our concern for you from the way we lived when we were with you, he meant it. They could see it in action. See, the Thessalonians had a front row seats to look into the life of Paul. And they would have seen him in action day in and day out. They did normal, everyday life with Paul, which means they would have known Paul's strengths and they also would have known Paul's weaknesses. They would have been very aware that Paul wasn't perfect. He wasn't sinless. And in reality, Paul didn't hide that from them. In fact, he was very aware of his own sinful nature, his weaknesses, and even some of his baggage from his past. See, before Paul met Jesus, his life mission was to seek out Christians and have them thrown in jail and even killed. Yet instead of hiding those things, he allowed the Thessalonians to come into his life and see how God was changing him to become more and more like Jesus. And it was actually through sharing these things that Paul revealed Jesus, not just in word, not just in speaking the gospel, but through the gospel in work in his very life. He allowed them to see his own struggles and his joys, his weaknesses, and the change that God was doing in him. And through it, he was showing them how he was processing through it all with Jesus, demonstrating a life moving towards him. And that was how Paul earned the right to speak into the Thessalonians' lives. Why? Because Paul was a concrete, in-the-flesh example of what happens when we are in a growing relationship with Jesus. And as the Thessalonians engaged with Paul, they saw him in action. They were on the receiving end of these intentional spiritual conversations and more. The Thessalonians saw Paul in their eyes as a model worth following. It was a life that they wanted. So the question is, what about us? Do we have intentional spiritual conversations with our kids? Are we living a disciple-making lifestyle not just in our homes, but everywhere we go? Are we becoming concrete in the flesh examples of what happens when we are in a growing love relationship with Jesus? Now, parents, the reality is we already have people in our lives, just like the Thessalonians with Paul. People who have a front row seat to what's happening inside of us. And just like the Thessalonians with Paul, they're looking at our lives and intentionally asking or internally asking the question of if they want a relationship with Jesus based on what they see in us. It's our kids. If we're looking to pour into our kids' lives and help them develop a lasting faith, then we have to ask some application questions of ourselves. When they look at our relationship with Jesus, what are they going to see? And will our kids see in us a life that demonstrates spiritual movement towards Jesus? Now, parents, if you really want to be bold, and if you have teens, I would challenge you to ask them this next question. From your perspective, have I grown spiritually this past year? If you do ask them, I would really encourage you to listen to what they have to say. Because the reality is they will often see things in us that we may not be aware of. And here's why. As our kids grow up, they are constantly looking at us as an example. What's more, they're close enough to us to tell the difference between what we say are our values and what our values really are deep down. Now, here's what I mean by this. Say one of the values that you're constantly trying to encourage in your kids is the importance of being a part of a church community. You want your kids to go to youth group so that they can build faith-building relationships with friends and other adults. However, what if you don't personally have any faith-building relationships yourself, where people are in close and intimate friendships with you, where they're encouraging you and challenging you in your faith? Here's what's going to happen. Our kids probably aren't going to care about those kind of relationships. They'll believe that those kinds of relationships are optional for them because they're optional for you. And as early as fourth grade, our kids are lining up what we as parents are saying with what we're doing. They aren't just imitating us anymore, they're also asking questions. And if we've stopped growing in our relationship with Jesus, but we keep pressing them to grow in theirs, we run the risk of our kids looking at us and saying internally, and sometimes externally, verbally, "You hypocrite." Now, there are two ways that we can react when we hear something like this. One is to step back and say, you know what, I'm just not at a place to be this kind of example in my kid's life. And when we take that posture, what often happens is we become very hands-off about personally investing into the lives of our kids. The other option is to begin to press into a relationship with Jesus and start moving towards him personally and bringing our kids into that journey. And here's the reminder for us. You don't have to have it all together to start championing movement towards Jesus. You just need to start moving. And it's when we start moving spiritually, not when we're perfect, not when we have it all together, but when we're moving, that we begin to earn the right to speak into the lives of others. And understand, our kids need to be invited into our life spiritually because they need to see our movement towards Jesus, not our perfection, because they need to see how they can move too. To do this means not just letting your kids see your life as an example from a distance. Like, mom and dad, I see them doing these things. But they need to see and experience the relationship. They need to be invited in. You see, we need to let our kids see us ask for things like forgiveness. They need to see us have spiritual conversations with them, even what kinds of conversations we're navigating ourselves. They need a taste of our growing delight and identity in Jesus. And they need to see us living a disciple-making lifestyle. They need to see us as a model worth following. Now, here's a quick reminder for the rest of us. Teens, you also have friends who are looking at you and considering your relationship with Jesus. They want to know if your life is moving towards him. And the same is true of coworkers or family, friends, any relationship we have. And when we're moving, when this is true of us, we begin to earn the right in the other person's life to speak about a relationship with Jesus. So the first piece of this posture is becoming a model worth following. Now let's look at the second piece of this posture towards relationships. It's this: unconditional love. As followers of Jesus, our ability to show unconditional love towards others is directly connected to our growing relationship with Jesus. For Paul, earning the right to speak into the lives of the Thessalonians could not be separated from them experiencing Paul's love and affection for them. It was foundational, and he showed it to the Thessalonians over and over and over again in actions and in words. And we see this in verse 5, as Paul reminds the Thessalonians of his love and concern for them and how it came out and how he lived with them, and it keeps going in his conversation with them throughout the rest of his letter. Now, the reality for us all is at some level we already know this. See, what will happen if we try to speak truth into somebody's life, especially where it will be challenging for them to hear, and they don't believe that we genuinely care about them? What's going to happen? They're probably not going to listen. Now, let's put this into the parenting world, because I truly believe the vast majority of parents really love their kids and really want to love them well. Yet there's a reality for us that we need to recognize. And it's this, that God has made us all unique. And this includes how people receive love. And it's especially true, understanding this is especially important for us in the parenting world. See, how our kids receive love matters far more than how we want to give it to them. To put it more strongly, if our kids don't feel loved, what we're doing to love them isn't going to count. Now, in a book, great book, How to Really Love Your Child, Ross Campbell uses the illustrations of kids having something internally called an emotional love tank. Now, by the way, this book is a great book, by the way. If you haven't read it, I would encourage you as parents to check it out. Now, here's the reality with this love tank. With kids, how full their tank is will ultimately affect not only their view of themselves, but it'll also impact their behavior and their willingness to follow the guidance and instruction of parents. Now, here's a quote directly connected to this issue from the book. Only if the emotional tank is full can a child be expected to be at his or her best or do his or her best. And whose responsibility is it to keep that emotional tank full? You guessed it, the parents. Here's how this applies to all of us, especially when it comes to disciple-making conversations. Does the other person believe that they are unconditionally loved by us? How they answer is important in earning the right to speak into that person's life, and is just as important as modeling a life that is being changed by Jesus. Now, this doesn't mean that we keep our distance in our relationship with somebody else so that there isn't any conflict. It also doesn't mean that we put up that we don't put up boundaries in place out of love for the other person. What it does mean is that our stance towards the other person is that we're working to cultivate a relationship where they believe that they are truly unconditionally loved by us. Because the reality is, they really are being unconditionally loved by us. Here's another quote from How to Really Love Your Child, and it brings these two pieces of this posture together. It says this, there are two requirements essential to helping a child spiritually, a parent's personal relationship with God and a child's assurance that he or she is loved unconditionally. When both of these things are true in our relationship with another person, in their eyes, we begin to earn the right to speak into their life where they're going to consider what we have to say. And understand it also creates a level of graciousness towards us from that other person. See, even when we mess up, even when we potentially hurt them, they're going to give us the benefit of the doubt because they know of our love towards them. Our stance towards another person is critical in earning the right to speak into their life. However, as we continue to earn that right to speak into their life, we also need to use it. Now, imagine what a person would be like if they arrived physically at adulthood, but they had never had anyone, not even a parent or a friend, give them instruction on how to grow up emotionally, grow up socially, intellectually, and spiritually. Now, to put a picture on it, here's a reality in my life. Titus is potty training right now. Okay, what would happen 3 years from now or 5 years from now or maybe even 10 years from now if no one talked with him about the whys and the hows of potty training? It's not a pretty picture because in a sense, he would never grow up in this area in his life. And to love him well means that we need to have conversations with him out of love and for his benefit, even if it means a temper tantrum because he doesn't want to go potty. This also includes not only getting our hands dirty, sometimes quite literally, but also learning to celebrate every time that there are signs of growth and being patient on days when it seems like we're just starting completely over. And as kids grow up, the conversations change. We're called to help our kids navigate their big questions in life in light of their relationship with Jesus, of who they are, and who God is. We help them emotionally process what's happening in their world, even when it feels like it's falling apart, and inviting Jesus intentionally into the conversation. Are we helping our kids fall in love with Jesus and grow up spiritually and giving the regular and intentional personal energy to guiding them along the way? Now, here's what's at the heart of the approach. Entering the other person's world just like Jesus entered ours. Now, I'm going to read a passage from John 1, 14 and 18, which is referring to Jesus. And I'm not going to put it up on the screen, but here's what it says. But the Word, this is Jesus, became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side. He has made him known. This is talking about Jesus. Jesus entered into our world to reveal the goodness and love of God. He knew we wouldn't see it on our own. He needed to reveal it to us. And he did so by coming in the flesh into our everyday life. And Paul shows that he did the same with the Thessalonians as he shared love and conversations with them like a parent would. And for both Jesus and Paul, after already entering into the world of the other person, the conversations they had were rooted in this question. What do they really need? See, this is the critical question. And recognize how we begin to answer this question when we're looking at somebody else connects deeply with our picture of who God is, our definition of sin, our understanding of our own baggage, our spiritual maturity, and as well as the unique personality and gifting of us and the person we're talking with. So let me give you some examples of this in action. Your toddler is bouncing off the walls and is struggling to do what you ask him or her to do. Now, if you reflect on it, what's more, you realize you really haven't spent a lot of personal time with them lately. And they had a bad night's sleep. What does the toddler really need? Now, we could say it's to do what we tell them. But if we look at the other factors, what they probably need is some intentional time one-on-one with us and a nap. All right, here's another one. What about an elementary kid who is caught stealing candy from the family stash? What do they really need? And while they need consequences and to understand that they broke the rule, do they understand why they did? And if not, they need to have a two-way conversation which guides them toward personally seeing the sinful desires that are at work within them. Or what about a teen? And teens, this might actually be you with a friend. What about a friend who just had a breakup with a boyfriend or girlfriend who is hurting their relationship with Jesus? Is what they really need in the moment to hear how bad that relationship was for them? Or do they need someone to be with them as they grieve the end of that relationship? See, they need to know that you care, and they need you to grieve with them in that moment. See, we need to be considering what the other person really needs right now as we engage with them in relationships as parents, as teens, as coworkers, and ultimately as followers of Jesus. And as we do, here's a critical truth we need to acknowledge and put into action in our conversations. Here's the key truth. What we say is just as important as our motives and how we say it. This is critical, and taking this key truth to heart can move conversations from a one-way lecture into a heart-engaging dialogue. So let's jump back to the example of an elementary student who took candy from the family stash. As a parent, when we encounter that situation, we're going to feel a lot of different things. We might feel angry or disappointed, frustrated, sad. Where did all of that come from? What's the source of anger? Now, here could be an example. What if you say you're mad because your son or daughter disobeyed you? They broke the rules, and now it's time for them to understand the consequences. And typically what follows is a lecture on what they did wrong and why, so that next time they will behave and they will obey you. Yet, is that in that moment what they need? Or is it, when you check your motives, is what you really just want is obedience? See, kids are great at sensing what our motives behind our words and actions are. That's why we need to be aware of our motives. And when we make mistakes, which we will, we need to ask our kids for forgiveness. They need to see us in process too. And it actually builds into us becoming a spiritual model worth following. Our motives matter. And so does how we say what we say. Imagine the difference as a kid you would have between a parent sitting you down and having you sit through a lecture being told what you did wrong. What about this? What if instead mom and dad sat down with you and were side to side and having a heart-to-heart conversation, one which guides you with questions to consider your own motives and helps you understand why you did what you did for yourself? As a kid, you will probably feel like your parents are talking with you rather than talking at you. And the truth of it all is that no one really wants to be talked at. What's more, being talked at never helps us learn how to unpack what's really happening inside of our own hearts. We could go on, but we need to wrap it up. And while we zoomed in on the example of Jesus and Paul, when it came to their stance and approach towards relationships, we need to remember how these build into the ultimate goal. See, as Paul is talking with the Thessalonians, he was celebrating how God used his life and his time with them. They were growing up spiritually. In fact, they were becoming disciple makers in the lives of others, following the example of both Jesus and Paul. And when it comes to parenting and disciple making, this is ultimately what we as followers of Jesus are called to shoot for. So let me end with two application questions for us. What next step might God be calling you to as a disciple maker in your relationship with others? Ask God to show you where he might want you to grow in your stance and your approach towards relationships with others. Take some time to connect with Jesus personally, and then let others into your life where they can see Jesus working in you and Jesus working through you. So here's the final question. Will you respond in this way with me this week? How will we respond? Let me pray, and then the worship team is going to come back up. Father, I thank you that you are a good God, that you love us, you care for us, and you have shown us examples in you and examples in other followers of Jesus of how to love as a parent and how to love as a disciple maker. Father, I pray that you would help us to take to heart the love, the care, the life that you lived, even as we approach others. And Father, thank you that you pursue us, that you love us, and that you are ultimately the parent of all parents. We praise you for this in your name. Amen.